Welcome, people, and thank you for tuning in. This is the Sports Underground Podcast with Barrett Graff.
And look who's coming up.
Only last week, I murdered a rock, injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
So let's do what we do tonight.
And now, from the Hotbox Studio in Los Angeles, which is literally an 8x10 box in Barron's garage, here's your host, Barron Graft.
Hey, hey, what is happening, folks? It's the Sports Underground, coming off a Thanksgiving weekend. Are you like me? Are you dreading going back to work tomorrow? Or have you worked all through the weekend? Are you one of those poor, unfortunate souls who do not get the weekend off? That's brutal. That's inhumane. That's cruel. Why are you working a retail job? Stop it. Retail sucks. Don't work retail. It sucks. Because of this. Because of this month of your life, working retail sucks. If you're working retail right now, just find a new job. Just make that a 2013 mission. Find a new job outside of retail. Jesus. All the rest of us are all rested and relaxed, and you feel like you've been through a three-day war working in retail. Ouch. Ouch. Sorry about that. I wish I could tell you it's going to get better. You people working in retail, the worst person on earth to be right now. Somebody who's worked in retail all weekend and also roots for the Philadelphia Eagles. You come off the most hellacious weekend of retail all year long, Black Friday, all the way through to Sunday. You get your ass kicked in retail for a whole weekend. You come home, whoo, Monday, got some Monday night football. I get to watch the Eagles play the Panthers. Can we beat the Panthers? This is brutal. I don't even know if, like, it's so bad. Like, I kind of feel bad for my DVR. I feel bad putting Monday Night Football on my DVR when it's the Philadelphia Eagles and the Carolina Panthers. I know I'm going to get home late because I live on the West Coast, so 8:30 p.m. start time on the East Coast means that game starts at 5:30 on the West Coast. That means, yeah, I'm not making it for the first couple of snaps at least. Plus with getting the kids to bed and all that other crap, it's usually I catch the second half if I don't tape it. So I put it on the DVR. I honestly feel guilty putting this game on the DVR. I looked at my DVR and I just thought, oh, I feel bad. I feel like I've betrayed my DVR. I feel like if my DVR was a transformer, you know, it would just go, what the hell, man? What are you doing to me? I will stomp. No, I don't know what transformers do. I'm not 12 anymore. So yeah, good on you. Oh, Philadelphia and Carolina. This is kind of like a before and after picture in a way. If Cam Newton doesn't learn how to read a defense, I'm not saying he can't. I'm not doing anything. I'm just saying this could be a before and after picture. Like, remember Michael Vick when he played in the NFC South and he was super exciting and everybody loved him and he had a shoe deal and everything was awesome and he was on the cover of video games and everything kicked ass? And now remember Michael Vick, who won't, he's not going to play. He's concussed. Again, and that's not to make light of concussions or head injuries. I'm just saying it's kind of one of those things where I said it for so long and was scoffed, nay, mocked, nay, ridiculed for my beliefs about who Michael Vick actually was and what he was as an NFL quarterback. I never, not one sip of Kool-Aid on the Michael Vick case for me. No thanks. I'll have the water. I'm going to stay sober on this one. You drink the Michael Vick Kool-Aid. I'll be around taking pictures when the feds show up and you're all dead in your fantasy football pool. So I would love to say it's going to be an interesting game on Monday Night Football. It kind of is. Kind of like when you find on YouTube like a picture of like a train smashing into a bus head on. It's kind of interesting in that kind of way. Like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. Is the train going to derail? Yeah, I mean, I know the bus is coming apart into a million pieces, but is the train going to stay on the tracks? Oh my God, is there anybody in that bus? It's kind of the same thing. You're like, hey, I know there's going to be a big, huge accident here. I just don't know who's going to survive. Is Andy Reid going to lose his job? Speaking of losing your job, a couple of people I think might be a little bit nervous. Jason Garrett in Dallas. Oh, Cowboys fans.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah. Boy, 1992 seems like a long time ago, doesn't it? Wow. That's because it is a long time ago, Baron. Okay, fair enough, alter ego, but that's enough out of you. It's a bad day when your quarterback can throw for 441 yards and you can still lose. Ouch. Hey, more ouch. How about Washington on Thanksgiving Day putting up 28 points in the second quarter? I mean, that was brutal. Brutal. It was like a drive-by shooting in Dallas on Thanksgiving. And I thought, man, that is horrible. I shut the game off. That's a beating. I can't watch that. Then the night game happened. Oh no. Yeah. Oh, the Jets. Oh, you got your, oh man, you got your teeth kicked in on Thanksgiving night. Ah. It reminds me of this guy.
You're going to look pretty funny trying to eat corn on a cob with no fucking teeth.
Yeah. I hope that none of the Jets have like, you know, relatives that are like European or Mediterranean. Like my wife's family is Greek, right? So we don't eat Thanksgiving dinner until like, you know, 2 a.m. or something. I mean, it's crazy. It's like, it seems like every year it gets later and later and later. Like we eat Thanksgiving dinner. And then it's like, oh look, Saturday Night Live's on. Wow, 3 days have passed since Thanksgiving. How about that? That's crazy. But it's awesome. We spent a lot of time together. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying, if you played for the Jets and your family was European and maybe you weren't having Thanksgiving dinner until after the game, yeah, going to be tough to have that corn on the cob now. Whew. 35-3 at halftime. That is phenomenal. That is an unbelievable beating. 49-19. Hey, New England's legit, guys. Yeah, New England's super legit in the NFL this year, which is kind of like a brutal understatement. Brutal understatement. Saw something pretty awesome in the NFL this week. So, Indianapolis Colts head coach Chuck Pagano, most people know this story already. He's fighting leukemia. He's got it bad. The players on the team have banded together. Some of the guys have shaved their heads. A lot of the guys now have shaved their heads in support. People all in the Indianapolis, in the Indiana state of Indiana, in the Indianapolis area, people are rallying to support Chuck Pagano and fight leukemia. They're shaving their heads and donating money. It's getting crazy. They just took it up a notch. So two Indianapolis Colts cheerleaders at the beginning of the fourth quarter of Sunday's game against Buffalo, two Indianapolis Colts cheerleaders shaved their heads.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It jumped up a notch.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah, you bet. When you got girls who make a living, women who make a living basically on their looks. I mean, let's call it what it is. They dance. I'm not trying to minimize what they do. It's phenomenal. But listen, usually NFL cheerleader, job reserved for attractive women. They're shaving their heads. They're going Demi Moore, G.I. Jane, to the scalp, shave their heads, find the video. It's amazing. And I'm telling you right now, you don't have to believe in Indianapolis this year. But listen, when you got a community and when you got people that are willing to do crazy stuff like that, that is the definition of fan, a fanatic. That place has something to rally behind. And if you don't think that a community and a team playing for something and rallying behind something means something in the NFL, ask the New Orleans Saints. You might remember they won the Super Bowl for the first time in franchise history a year after Hurricane Katrina. Okay? It means something. It does. That's crazy. And good for her. Good for those two cheerleaders. Good for them. I applaud that. I think that's amazing. I also think it's amazing. I watched the Giants and the Packers and that thing. Wow, the Packers, again, getting their teeth kicked in. But what I thought was really, really hilarious about that game was the post-game interview where Michelle Tafoya is interviewing OC Umenyor, and she asks him a question, and he opens with, "You know what, man? We just had to get after it." I love that. I love when grown men refer to the sideline reporter, who is most frequently a woman, as "man." "You know what, man?" Now, in OC's defense, Michelle Tafoya is kind of mannish. She's kind of got a manly thing going. I'm not judging her again. I'm not going on looks or anything. I'm just saying, I can kind of see it. Like, maybe if I've played four quarters of tough football, gotten knocked in the head a couple of times, can't hear real loud, my ears might be ringing, maybe my vision's a little blurred. I can see that. I can see that. I can see being at an adult establishment, having a few drinks, looking across the bar and thinking, "Eh," and mistaking Michelle Tafoya for a man with long hair. I'm not saying that's what I would do, but I'm saying if that happened, I would believe it. Like, if you told me that story happened to you, like, "Hey, Baron, craziest thing happened. I was in a bar the other night, had a few adult beverages, and I looked across the bar, this dude making eyes at me." I'm like, "Holy crap, that guy with long hair is making eyes. This place is weird. I'm freaking out. I mean, that's cool for you, but I don't play that way." And I had to get out of there. And then later, my buddies told me, "Dude, Michelle Tafoya was making eyes at you at the bar." Like, if somebody told me that happened, I'd be like, okay, I can kind of see that. But I still think it's hilarious when grown men, supposedly educated men, because most of these guys, you have to go to college to play in the NFL. So supposedly you've received some level of higher education. These guys frequently on the sideline. Now, see, it's one of those things that once you've heard me tell you, now I've told you, I've ruined it for you, because now you're going to hear it all over the place. It's like the stadium rock. It's like the stadium song. It's like Crazy Train. Remember earlier this year I told you, Crazy Train, kickoffs in the NFL, they love to play that Crazy Train. Can't unhear that. Now, every time you see a sideline reporter interviewing someone, and that poor girl asks a question, and you hear, "Well, look, man, you know what, man? Hey, man." It's going to ruin you. I promise you right now. The NFL is a mess. I still don't know how Norv Turner has a job in San Diego, but I'm not running things down there. So what can you do, really? Yeah. Moving over into the second block of the show, we're going to talk some college football. And listen, if you listen to the show, if you know me at all, if you've talked to me this year at all about college football, you know that I've maintained the position throughout the year that I'm just not sold on Notre Dame. Well, listen, nothing about Notre Dame's win over Southern Cal on Saturday did anything to convince me further. As a matter of fact, it just more deeply entrenched me in my belief that Notre Dame is not for real. The good news is everywhere else in the country, championship week is upon us. Now, that is unless you're Notre Dame. This is the first of 6 weeks off for Notre Dame. I can't believe that college football still has such a long break between the end of the regular season and the bowl games. There are a few other non-conference championship games this week, but nobody really cares. The only game anybody's really focused on right now is the SEC championship. Unless you went to a school that is playing for a championship, unless you went to Stanford, unless you went to UCLA or go there, unless you went to these schools, you don't care about any other game. I'll put it to you this way. If you are college football team agnostic, as I am, or if your team is already hopelessly out of it, like most teams now, there's only really one interesting game this weekend, and that's the SEC championship. Because the winner of that game is going to face Notre Dame in the national championship game. This means that Notre Dame's either going to play Alabama or Georgia. It would take a monumental act of God for a team other than Alabama or Georgia to wind up in the championship game. It's as close to completely impossible as you can get. So, whoever wins that game between Georgia and Alabama, you can bet on them to be a favorite against the Irish. Now, listen, if Notre Dame thinks that they can put up one touchdown and eke out five field goals against the two best defenses in the SEC, they're in for a real surprise in South Bend. The only team that comes close to either Alabama or Georgia that the Irish have played, the only team that's even remotely at all like them, is Stanford. Because Stanford, the Cardinal, they play that tough physical game where you run, you play defense, and you do not turn the ball over. And the Irish barely beat Stanford. Barely beat Stanford. And the problem with this is that Stanford plays the same style as Georgia, as Alabama. The problem is that those programs, Alabama and Georgia, are light years ahead of Stanford. I mean, you're talking about, their cars, right? And Stanford is the Model T, and Alabama is a Bugatti, and Georgia is a Ferrari. Like, it's not even close. The only thing is you look at it and you go, they got four wheels, and you drive it with that wheel up top, and it's got a windshield. Same thing, it's a car. All comparison ends there. So the game to look out for this week is the SEC title game. It's in Atlanta. And I think Georgia has a real chance to beat Alabama here. The Bulldogs play the same type of game that Texas A&M plays. And that's the team that knocked Alabama off earlier this year. Now, granted, Georgia doesn't exactly play that spread offense that the Aggies use. But their offense is fast. It's torrid. They got multiple guys that can get on top of you quick. They got guys that can stretch the field. The only way that they can beat Alabama, the only way anybody can beat Alabama, is you get out ahead fast and force the Tide to play catch up, because that is not Alabama's game. No one's going to beat the Tide by out slugging them on the ground and playing tough D. That ain't going to happen. That's Alabama's game, and you're not going to beat them at it. Ask anybody. It ain't going to happen. LSU is a prime example. They've tried to beat Alabama at their own game for the last 3 years. All that's happened as a result of that is we've got the same shot of Les Miles scratching his forehead in the fourth quarter with time running out. We got that exact same shot 3 years in a row. That's the result of LSU trying to beat Alabama at their own game. You got to make them play outside the box. You have to make them uncomfortable. That's what Texas A&M did. Texas A&M put up a bunch of points on the board, got them uncomfortable, got them to where they were trying to play something that wasn't their game, made them play from behind, made them try to score a bunch of points in a hurry. They made them pass more, essentially. They kept the D guessing. You know, that's how Texas, that was the formula for Texas A&M. And Georgia can do that. Georgia has the ability to do that. And the question is, with a trip to the BCS title game, something that they haven't thought about for 30 years, since 1982, since a guy named Herschel Walker was toting the rock for the Dogs, they haven't even sniffed. They haven't even been this, they have not been this close to a national title for 30 years. So the question is, which Georgia team is going to show up? Is this going to be the phenomenal Georgia team we've seen? Or is this going to be the Georgia team that has some mental letdowns? That makes mistakes when they shouldn't? We'll see. We'll see. A couple other things of note. If you're a deep, hardcore college football geek like I am, a couple of things to pay attention to. Friday night is the MAC championship. Now, check this out. This is another glitch in the BCS. Because if number 17 Kent State, they're 11-1, mind you, if they beat number 21 Northern Illinois in that game, they may get a berth into a BCS bowl. I say, what? A MAC team in the BCS? If a non-automatic qualifying team finishes in the top 16 and ahead of one of the BCS conference champions, then the non-automatic qualifying team gets an automatic berth. That's a lot to say. Basically, what it means is, if you're not from a BCS conference and you finish ahead of somebody in the rankings that is, and nobody else in their conference is ahead of you, you can get there. There's currently no Big East team ranked in the top 25. And since Kent State's at 17, they only have to really move up one spot. If they beat a ranked team, they're going to move up. Now, also, if number 16 UCLA loses to Stanford, which is a reasonable conclusion based on what happened last weekend, and Kent State wins, they're definitely going to move up. Now, this is a real joke. Kent State's 11-1, right? Well, don't be too impressed by that. Just like record doesn't mean a lot for the Irish, record doesn't mean a lot at Kent State. Kent State lost to Kentucky by 33 points. That's their one loss. The 2-10 Wildcat team that's winless in the SEC boat raced Kent State. In fact, the only two wins this year for Kentucky were Kent State and 1AA Samford. Yeah, remember the highlight reel of that guy who returned the muff punt earlier this year going the wrong way and he ran for like 50 yards before one of his teammates tackled him? Yeah, that was a Kent State player. Now tell me, in what system does this team deserve a BCS bowl? Seriously. But hey, the BCS must be right. It's got to be correct. They definitely know best. So tune in on Friday to find out if Kent State's going to a BCS bowl or not. What a joke. This is a laughingstock. And it ties back into why I've never been a believer in record. It's why I've always hated the BCS. I hated it even more when margin of victory was factored in. So you'd see these teams schedule these 1AA Samfords and Louisiana Techs. And like, they just run the score up to the high heavens on these guys. And that's the problem. That is essentially my problem with the BCS and with the whole system as it currently stands, is that it doesn't solve it on the field. I'm going to stick with this, right? Because listen, I don't think that, I know Notre Dame's going to play in the national championship. I'm not sure that they're even deserving of that. I think I would rather see Oregon versus Alabama or Georgia. I think I'd rather see Kansas State versus the winner of Alabama and Georgia. I'd rather see either of those games than Notre Dame versus the winner of the SEC championship, because I don't think it's going to be a game. And I just saw some article Pat Forty posted on Yahoo saying, hey, it's not a foredrawn conclusion that the SEC is. Yeah, hype this all you want, right? You can put as much lipstick on this pig as you want to. Notre Dame's going to get hammered by whoever they face. It doesn't matter which one loss team you pick, they're going to get hammered. I mean, look, here's the thing. People want to hang the hat on, oh, they beat USC. USC was ranked really high. USC. I was so thoroughly unimpressed by their win over USC on Saturday night. I was almost disgusted by watching it. Keep in mind, you're talking about USC that has the same record as Arizona State. Take that in. Same record as Arizona State. That's brutal. This is the USC team that is 46th in the country in points allowed per game. You know, you contrast that against an Alabama who allows just over one touchdown per game on defense. That ain't going to work, folks. I'm just telling you right now, that ain't going to work. On top of that, Notre Dame was woefully behind at the cornerback position. They basically had to hold Marquise Lee in the end zone twice in a row to keep the Trojans from scoring late and making it a game. It's a hole in the rule book because, honestly, that he wasn't even trying to play defense. The Notre Dame player was basically just tackling the USC receiver in the end zone. So, whatever. You keep drinking the Notre Dame Kool-Aid. I'm having water. Stick around, we're talking Major League Baseball next. How's that Kool-Aid taste? Have another one. Just go ahead and have another one. Have a drink on me on that one. So Major League Baseball, we told you we're going to talk about Major League Baseball, hot stove, off-season, good stuff. Hey, listen, I'm going to tell you something. I actually played baseball the other day, like a real-life baseball game, not like on a video game, not like, oh, I played softball with a bunch of drunk guys. No, I actually played, well, I probably played baseball with a bunch of drunk guys, but that's besides the point. Thanksgiving morning, I played a baseball game. You didn't mishear me. And listen, I'm a catcher by trade. That's what I do. I throw on the old implements of destruction and go to it. And I showed up on Thanksgiving morning, and I caught a baseball game for the first time in like 20 years. It was unbelievable. Not going to lie, my legs hurt quite a bit. My arm hurt quite a bit. But yeah, my soul, about 1,000%. If you haven't done something that you loved as a child, I love baseball. I know it's hard for you to believe. It doesn't really come through when I talk, but I love baseball. Like, to my core, I love baseball. Like, if you're like, Baron, you got to give up one thing for the rest of your life, church or baseball. Like, you wouldn't even finish the statement. I'd be like, church. Baseball is religious to me. Baseball is so deeply ingrained in me, I can't even imagine a way to give it up. And so going out there and doing that again after like 20 years was unbelievable. Strongly recommend it. If there's something you loved as a kid, something that you were tied to that you haven't done, if you're like me, if you put that on the shelf, if you didn't go back for a decade or two, I strongly encourage you to pick it up and go back. It's not too late. Never too late. So we're going into baseball. National League East was last week. This weekend, We took a closer look, me and my brother-in-law, who also loves baseball like I do, took a closer look at the National League Central and look at the offseason. We're just going to go top to bottom in that division. So the Cincinnati Reds finished 2012 at the first place of the NL Central. They lost in the National League Division Series. From payroll perspective, they were 17th in Major League Baseball at $82.2 million. And despite a disappointing end to their season, the Reds won the Central Division last year by a solid 9 games. That in spite of the fact that they spent less money than half the teams in the league. They had their share of big names, star players, bats were good. They finished in the middle of the pack in the offense, but pitching was where they really stood out. It may be hard for the Reds to see past the fact that they blew a 2-game lead in the NLDS, but the team, for the most part, had a successful 2012 campaign. 97 wins was the most by the Reds in over 35 years since the Big Red Machine, basically. The first sign of evidence that the Reds liked the outcome of last season is the fact that they re-signed manager Dusty Baker. They have several other key players under contract already. Guys like Bronson Arroyo, guys like Jay Bruce, Aroldis Chapman, Johnny Cueto. They've got an option contract on Ryan Ludwig. Brandon Phillips is going to be there. Joey Votto. So they got a bunch of those guys. And they got a couple of key free agents that they need to lock down, but nobody really, really urgent with the exception of one player. The overall analysis going into 2013 is what you would consider, the Reds have what you would consider a good problem. And that's whether or not they should make Aroldis Chapman a starter or keep him in the bullpen. If he's moved into the rotation, that gets much stronger, but then they're without a shutdown closer. And that makes Jonathan Broxton a must guy, a must re-sign for the Reds. So an early indicator for the Reds on whether or not they're going to send Chapman back to the bullpen or move him to the rotation is whether or not they sign Broxton, a free agent, in the offseason. But the primary, the first concern that they have is they got to track down a leadoff hitter who plays in the outfield. Because Ludwig declined his option, he's still technically under contract. So the Reds do get the chance to re-sign him. If that doesn't happen, they're going to be a suitor for a guy like Angel Pagan, or maybe they'll spend the money on Michael Bourne. Because replacing Roland and Renteria is not going to be a problem. They have young players waiting to step up. They've got Zach Cozart at shortstop. They got Todd Frazier, who played all over the place for him last year and played well. So clearly, their two big needs, solve the bullpen and find a permanent outfield solution who's going to hit leadoff. And that and maybe finding a closer. Other than that, it's going to be more of the same for the Reds. You can expect them to keep rolling. Second place in the National League Central was the St. Louis Cardinals. They finished 88-74. They lost in the National League Championship Series to the eventual World Series champion Giants. So for 2012, this is a team that was ninth in Major League Baseball in payroll at $110 million for the season. Paid their average player salary was just under $4 million per player, which is eighth in Major League Baseball. Still not overly bad for a small market team that spends more like a middle market or a large market team. In terms of breaking down 2012, it's difficult because I think by and large the Cardinals exceeded expectations. I mean, look, anytime you lose the best manager in baseball in Tony La Russa, arguably the best hitter in baseball in Albert Pujols, without question you lost the best pitching coach in baseball from Dave Dunking leaving, and then on top of that you have your staff ace, or one of them, Chris Carpenter, injured for most of the season. Any other team in baseball sees all of that happen in one offseason, I don't think they're making it to the NLCS. So I will say that this is a Cardinal team that overachieved in this season. And that was due largely in part to the input of rookie players and young guys, and they stepped up, and it was really impressive to watch the farm system, just crank out one guy after another that had meaningful at bats, meaningful defensive plays. It was really amazing. The real question is, what's going to happen in 2013? Because as exciting as that young talent is, pitching is a huge question. You got Carpenter and Wainwright both on contract years, so it's going to be interesting to see how they pitch. You got the mystery of Lance Lynn. He was the best pitcher in baseball in the first half. He started the All-Star game for the National League, and then in the second half, he completely disappeared. So which Lance Lynn's going to show up for the Cardinals this year? Who knows? Jaime Garcia, is he going to return to form? You just don't know. And all of that is set in the backdrop of them losing their most productive starting pitcher for the last 2 years, Kyle Loesch. So I would say that pitching is a big question mark for this team. It certainly isn't hitting. It certainly isn't defense, as they're strong in most every position on the field, with the exception of maybe shortstop, second base. You got some young guys there, and that's really where the rubber meets the road for the Cardinals in 2013. Will these young players continue to evolve, continue to progress, and continue to make leaps forward, or are they going to have a sophomore slump? And this is huge, because if all those young guys have a sophomore slump at the same time, you could be in for a long season in St. Louis. Just saying that out loud. I don't think so. I think they're still going to play well. I like Mike Matheny as a manager. I think they're going to be fine. The Milwaukee Brewers finished with 83-79, third in the National League Central, did not make the playoffs. They did have a winning season. Other than that, nothing really much worked out for them. It was going to be a lot worse, except for they went 24-6 at the end. And most of the problem was in the bullpen. They scored more runs than anybody in the National League, but 22nd in team ERA. So the offense is set. They're really going to have to do some stuff with the pitching staff, the bullpen especially. And since they're a small market team, they shouldn't be a player for some of the bigger free agents. They may trade for value. They may go after some players that people haven't commonly heard of. Maybe a guy like a Jason Gurriele from Pittsburgh. Guys like that, they might jump up and go after a guy like Dan Heron, but they're not going to make any waves until some other moves have been made. Look for them to be a player after Christmas. Fourth in the National League Central was the Pittsburgh Pirates. And this is, Pittsburgh is a team that breaks my heart because I love Pittsburgh. I want to root for them. Every year it seems like they get a little bit closer. They hung around until late August this year and then just completely collapsed. And strikeouts were their nemesis. They had the most strikeouts in the National League in the second half, and you just can't do that and win baseball games. They're just a real middle-of-the-road team that played over their head for a lot of the year. And a lot of that in Pittsburgh is attributed to Andrew McCutchen. This is the guy who won the Silver Slugger Award. He was in the top 10 in the National League in the following categories: runs, hits, he actually led the National League in, home runs, walks, average, on-base percentage, slugging, and OPS. That's a phenomenal offensive output. The problem is that the Bucks kind of shipwrecked on McCutchen Island, and everybody was marooned there because nobody else hit with him. So that's going to need to be fixed. Their rotation's a big question. That's going to need to be fixed. We'll see what's going to happen for the Pirates. Unless they do something and unless they're willing to spend some money, I don't see them getting significantly better. And then we come to the lowly Cubs. 61-101 losses. Only Houston sucked more than Chicago. The playoffs? The playoffs. The payroll was 15th in Major League Baseball. To say it would be bad would be an understatement. That would be like calling the Titanic a boat wreck. That would be like calling the Chicago Fire a small blaze that got out of control. Just take this in. They paid Carlos Zambrano over $15 million last year. And if you think the end is anytime soon in Chicago, you're dead wrong. They still owe a lot of guys a lot of money. So buckle up. It's going to be a long year in Chicago. Whatever you guys do this week, keep right.
You have been listening to the Sports Underground Podcast, and you know we always welcome your take. You can find the Sports Underground on Facebook, so go ahead and like it. If you want to download, hit us up on iTunes. And remember, come back again next time and get some.